I'm Gabby's Jules. Blue Skies over West London. Jules, the Champions League is back. Woo! How about that? We have our Elite Eight in Europe. Yep. I have to say, not too many surprises, but Napoli going through, Inter going through.
Yeah.
I know why you're wearing that shirt.
Three Italian clubs got
37.5% of the Champions League teams are Italian.
Only one would be left after the quarterfinals. But anyway.
By the way, the greatest city in the history and legacy of the Champions League, my hometown of,
Milano. You have two.
We have two teams. Hasn't happened since 2006. I want a derby. Preferably in the next round, because I don't think they're going any further if they're playing anybody else. But we'll get to that. But shall we start with the man who scored 5 goals? Erling Haaland, like Pep pretended to, I generally thought, well, maybe Leipzig disrupting the press, blah, 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 even though they don't have Nkunku and they don't have Schlager and what, and they don't have Gulashi. City wiped the floor for him.
Yeah.
And Erling Haaland scoring 5 goals, equaling the record set by Luis Adriano. No, just 2 legends, yeah, Erling Haaland and Luis Adriano.
And Messi.
Oh, yeah. Messi.
And that's just for the Champions League, by the way. Not the European Cup.
Okay, I was going to go back and check, but I couldn't be bothered.
Yeah,
are there people who scored more goals in before?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know who they are?
It's quite a long list, I think. Someone sent me the list. I can't remember the names. We can find that. No, I promise you.
Really?
Quite
all
a
right.
Long list.
Stay tuned. I want to follow up on this.
As you said, football was not invented in 1993. So.
This is very, very true. I just want to stay on Haaland for a second, just because it was pretty remarkable.
Oh, yeah.
What's remarkable, too, is he went off in minute 63.
Yeah.
Pep joked, like, ah, ha, ha, I didn't even know about Messi. Like, people was like, oh, look, Pep is protecting Messi's record. All nonsense, of course. I am curious about the mentality. Pep joked that, he's a young guy. I want to get a chance to go and break his own record.
Yeah, if he's 22 and beats that record, then,
But still, would you have taken him off after 63 minutes?
I think that at halftime, this was the plan. Regardless of how many more he would score, he would come off at the hour. Because there's a lot of games to be played. And because there's no need to take any risk in terms of injury.
Yeah,
if you open a Gvardiol and he's already humiliated you, I think at some point, if I was Gvardiol, I would lay it into him. There would be a point where I'd be so frustrated, so annoyed, that I wouldn't be surprised if I were getting hard on him.
It's interesting because Stevie Nicol made the same comment on the FC show last night. And I was like, really?
Yeah, of course, man. But you've seen it. You've seen people we've seen, for example, Jude Bellingham in the Chelsea-Dortmund game, late in the game, losing his head in a way because he was frustrated of the result and going through tackle on Reece James. There was one where there was another one just before. You don't know what can happen.
I guess so. I think as a coach...
But he felt a bit harsh. He felt a bit harsh.
It does feel a bit harsh. Like, yeah. Pep Pascal is back. I mean, I look forward and I say, all right, they don't have another game for what, like another 3 weeks? They just have the FA Cup this weekend and then
international break. Yeah, but he's going to go away. He's going to play, two games again.
I mean, I don't know. I think Pep's entitled to make those big calls.
Yeah.
We saw City with a lineup again with Stones in the Rico Lewis position, where he's a midfielder but a fullback. Because
you mean the Didier Deschamps, 4 centre backs in the back four? That's what you mean. The 2018
was he in a back four because he's wandering into midfield?
It's 4 centre backs who play at the back.
Who play in? But then Rodri's a centre back too, right?
Yeah, but like, do you know what I mean? At least when you have Walker, when you have Rico Lewis, when you have Gomez, it's a bit different. That 4 centre backs, I love it because you're right. Ake and Stones are now really, I think they got really into grip of that sort of hybrid defender / midfielder, which is really interesting. But it's still 4 centre backs, 4 big guys at the back.
It's interesting because 1,000% what would have happened if somehow they'd screwed this up. It would have been, Pep overthinking again. Pep goes and does something different, unorthodox, unusual. He's overthinking it. This really, really bugs me. Because what makes Pep good, what makes managers good, is when they adjust to the game, to the opposition, making changes – that they think will give them an edge.
Yeah.
And it just seems that with Pep, when he does it and they win, which is what they usually do, it's rarely because of his changes, right? It's rarely because, you know, he does. It's not, people say, oh, look, Pep, great chemistry, blah, 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 great players, yada, yada, yada. But it's not because he did something unusual, like, you know, getting Walker to step into midfielders and whatever he's done over the years. But when they lose, it's always down to that, right? Jose, I want to talk a bit more about Leipzig and Marco Rose. But first, you want to talk about the referee, because French people, I think you're outraged. I think in France,
outraged,
you have surpassed Italians in terms of being obsessed with referees.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Because,
maybe
I'm sorry, City beat Leipzig 7-0.
Yeah.
Erling Haaland scores 5 goals.
Yeah.
And you show me that in France, all you guys talked about was the referee?
Yeah, the penalty, which I think has to be discussed. I know the letter of the law is that he brushes the arms of Heinrich. Okay. I think that if the ball doesn't change direction after the end ball or the handball, or the handball stops the ball, in this case, it didn't change anything at all. Nobody appealed. No City players, no one, not even Rathin Rodri or Ruben Dias, who did the header. Nobody. It didn't really. You could see on the very slow motion that indeed he just brushes his arm, but the ball goes in the same direction, almost at the same pace. It has no impact whatsoever on the header. So I can see why.
But it was also behind him, and it was also close range.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of, you could have said, like, come on, don't give that one. Like, why? And maybe the law or the rule has to be clearer, or maybe you change it and you say, like, if the ball doesn't change direction, you don't give it. I don't know, but it felt harsh. The City would have still beat them, but that was 0-0. And even if City had chances before, it was still 0-0. And the first goal is very important for the dynamic. All of that, I get it. I still think City would have won anyway. But I can see the debate there. Then there's the Edison coming out of his goal, clearing the ball again, slightly touching the ball first, but then also clattering in Lima.
And he wasn't even booked for that.
No, Werner was booked. Werner was booked.
I think it was descent. I think he put Edison, his hand. Werner, not the shot, just the box.
Protested.
Don't put. You know, if you want it, if he had simply shouted at the referee, unless he'd called him a bad name, he wouldn't have been booked. Instead, he goes, he puts his hand on him. I mean, come on, man. Yeah, like, seriously.
And I don't think Ederson would have been sent off because there was a two or three City players around that counter.
It was not a denial of goal scoring opportunity.
Definitely not. But apart from that, City was still so dominant and so
good. I want to ask about that.
And Leipzig were disappointing.
Ederson coming off his line like that. So you're taking a risk, right? You're taking a risk because you could miss the ball, you could clatter him. You know, you're coming off your line, but you can't be sure, like, oh, look, I won't be sent off because people are coming. I kind of feel, dude, if you just sit, even if they score, you're at home, you've got Haaland, you got this. Whereas if you get sent off,
of course,
then you're into Ortega Carson territory and you're a man down.
Yeah.
It's not.
No, and again, there was cover. It's not like if it was this amazing, it was a really good counter-attack, but it's not like if it was Werner had gone through at the halfway line and everybody was way behind for City and it was just, you know, him and I, and he had to go for it. A bit like what we saw with Mac Maignan, for example, against Salernitana the other night, on Monday night. But
it's Magic Mike.
Sorry. But yeah, I agree with you. I thought it was just taking a risk for no reason. Like and again, it could have gone the other way. It wouldn't have been sent off. But yeah, it was like, I don't think he thought that went through at all.
All right. As for Leipzig, you can't go and spot what arguably your best player, your goalkeeper, who is very, very important for you, especially in the build-up play, because that dude Blažević, you're not good. Like, not good. I don't think Gulashi is God's gift to goalkeeping either, but in that system, he's got the experience and everything.
Yeah.
He works very, very well.
Yeah.
Those two. And then Schlager also out in midfield.
Yeah.
And he kind of compounded it by saying, let me put another kind of midfielder rather than Campbell, attacking.
Yeah.
By putting, you know, so he went Campbell, Haidara, and Laimer,
yeah.
Which, if you want, is a slightly more conservative, you know, because Laimer was almost like the winger on the other side, right?
Yeah, but we thought Andre Silva would start up front with Forsberg behind, and just two of those three that you mentioned.
But still, those are big losses for Leipzig.
No, they are. It's still the wrong tactics. You can't... So, three midfielders and Forsberg as a false nine, and then Werner and Szoboszlai. Szoboszlai on the left-hand side as well, which is really strange, because you would think Werner would be on the left and Szoboszlai on the right, which is usually their prime positions.
And then Danny you try Olmo, to play... who maybe wasn't fully fit, but I know, still...
But, yeah, but Andre Silva... So, either you could play long and win the second balls, and then you could put a bit of pressure on City. But if you decide to play from the back, like they try to do, which was suicidal, really, and then cost them the second goal so quickly after the penalty that was already a bit harsh, then the game is gone. You don't have any players in that midfield three press resistant, really. Okay, maybe Haidara can do it. Lima, maybe. But those players are better to press, really, and they have this incredible energy and activity. But you never really got to see it because it was too late. You gave away a stupid second goal for trying to play out from the back where you don't have the players to, really, especially with a midfield like that. So I just didn't understand at all what Rose wanted to do, and I was just... left completely disappointed.
I think Rosa said, these guys are so much better than we are. I got to do something unexpected. And maybe he said, maybe Forsberg dropping off is something that they don't expect and whatever. And, you know, Pep will prepare for something different. But I don't know. We got to take it easy when on somebody.
Yeah. I think there was too much difference anyway.
Erling Haaland... incidentally, just for the record, beating the mark. He's now set a new City seasonal
goal scoring record. 39 goals, indeed.
Beating a record by Tommy Johnson, I think was his name, some dude from the 20s, and he has a street named after him in Manchester. I'm assuming there'll be a street named after Erling Haaland very soon as well, right, on this pace?
Yeah, there might be 39 with potentially 19 games still to play if they play them all and if they go into, you know, FA Cup final, Champions League final, plus the league. So, I don't know, another 20 goals? That would be 59? Like,
if you get into that territory, the record, the seasonal record, and seasonal record's not really a thing until recently. I mean, I think Messi had the year where he scored 73, was it, or whatever?
Yeah. He did 92 over the calendar year, didn't he? And then, something like that for a season.
The English record, which I assume would never be beaten, is Dixie Dean, who, again, Everton fans forgive me, either had 63 or 61. I forget. And that was this is in the 30s! In the 1930s! I mean, that's... there is one other thing I want to address quickly before we get into Pep's comments, which was this business that there's always an overreaction, I think, right? I heard this time and again in the media, among the pundits and stuff. Oh, look, how can people say that Haaland makes your team worse? How can people say that? How can people say that, right? And yeah, it's a very easy thing to say after he scores 5 in a game. But sometimes more than one thing can be true. So I think the people who said Haaland requires an adjustment, I wrote a whole column defending him after the Charity Shield when they lost, and kind of allowing for the fact that it might take some time, but he'll make them better. It's not the stupidest thing in the world to come out and say. People said it with Cristiano Ronaldo too, like, oh, how is it possible that he makes you worse? Well, it's not that he makes you worse. It might take time because you have to adjust and change the way you play. And he has to adapt so that for a period of time, you might not be as good a unit overall as you were before. And I think we've seen that this season. And it's not just because of Haaland. But City this year.
They still have been very good this season.
They've been very good, but you could say they weren't as good as they were 2 years ago. Like, I think more than one thing can be true at the same time. Obviously, Haaland makes you better in the longer term, but it is a team game, and they do have to tweak the way they play, right?
Yeah. I think there's three quotes very important that happened before the game and after the game against Leipzig. The first one is Pep coming out and said, I want more from him than just scoring goals.
Right.
I want him to take part in the build-up play. I want him to get involved. I just don't want him to stay in the box. Which we kind of knew, but at least Pep said it.
He doubled down on that. He said he says, you know, if he gets 5 goals from 8 touches, great. If he gets 5 goals from 30 touches, even better, right?
He said something like that after the game. He touched the ball 23 times in
well, he said
in Leipzig.
And, you know,
but Pep, after the game, said he touched the ball 23 times, which is what we want.
I thought he said 30, but whatever.
Or 30, maybe, you're right. But Haaland, after the game, said, if I can score 5 goals on 5 touches, I'd be very happy. This is Pep's nightmare. This is not what Pep... And I don't believe Pep when he says, if he scores 5 in 8 touches, I'd be happy. I don't think... yeah, of course, he'd be happy because he scored 5 exactly. And you're very likely to win the game. But yeah. You see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But what De Bruyne said as well on Monday, which I thought was very interesting, he said, like, team in the Premier League now, I've worked it out. They're defending much better on us and on him than maybe earlier in the season. And there was suddenly in the turn of the year, there was, I think, 6 games in a row where he scored just 1 or something. There was a bit of a dip because he felt like maybe the others have worked it out. And even if De Bruyne himself says, like, you know, others have worked out how to defend better, I don't think you can keep him quiet
right.
too much, but defend better on him. And I think this is also right. So you're right on, are they better, not better without him? It's certainly a different team, for sure. Pep is right to want more from him. I'm not sure Haaland really is too keen, hence the line, like, you know, 5 in 5 touches, I'm very happy.
I wouldn't put too much.
Yeah, I don't think it's his game, and I think he knows it. I don't think it's his game at all to touch the ball 50 times and to be very involved in the build-up play. Let's not forget, the more involved in the build-up play you are, the further you are from the box and from the goal. And I think for him, all he cares about, all he thinks of is to be as close as the goal as possible.
It's a good debate. I don't know. I don't know enough about Erling Haaland personally to know what's in his head. Certainly, we know people who know Erling Haaland very well, starting with Jan.
Yeah, of course.
Every indication I've had from people who've worked with him is that this person is a football nerd, right? I mean, he is like us. He's the guy who watches football, who studies football.
Yeah,
and so
yeah
on.
No, but of course. That's...
And because he's not stupid, and because he studied football, he's been almost like raised in a lab, right? Every step of his career has been, how can you be the best possible footballer? And hence, that's why you get, you know, the yoga and the meditation and all this stuff. I think he knows that he is a better footballer, a more impactful footballer, when he's more than just a goal scorer. And he knows, I think, that there is this... I don't think he's the kind of guy where if they lose 4-3 and he scores a hat-trick, he's happy. Put it that way. Unlike some other goal scorers, but...
I don't know. If you ask him, if you ask Benzema, if you ask Kane, oh, do you like dropping deep? Do you like... They would say yes. If you ask him, I don't think he will say yes. And I don't think that's his game either. Good for Pep. Pep is going to make him more complete. It's great. He's going to be even a better player. No problem. I really don't think that's his thing.
Wasn't Harry Kane's game when he was 22 either.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Exactly. Maybe it comes later. But why not?
All right. Pep's other comments. So, first of all...
The Julia Roberts comment?
No, the Julia Roberts.
I love Julia Roberts comment.
Do you want to tell the Julia Roberts story?
Because it doesn't make any sense. But
I don't understand it. I don't care about it. Sometimes it's still, clever and it falls
it's Pep for you.
No, but Pep went on Italian television. Pep always does this, right? Like, and I don't blame him, right? It's not that he's, you know, necessarily trying to suck up to somebody or whatever. But, you know, he's very aware of what he's saying and who he's talking to. So they ask him, I know, some generic question about the Champions League. And, well, first of all, he goes on a complete tangent about his buddy, Roberto De Zerbi.
Yeah, of course.
He's like, oh, we have De Zerbi, he's doing such a fantastic job, blah, blah, blah. And he's doing a great job.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I do wonder about
these
two guys.
That's not the place.
Guys.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's not right.
But then he says, there's the two best footballing teams in Europe, play the best football in Europe. Do you want to guess who he said?
I mean, I know, so you should tell him.
Arsenal and Napoli. Is he right?
I think so. You can look at all the other leagues. I don't think Barca have been playing great. I don't think Real Madrid have been playing great. Or Atletico Madrid. I don't think Bayern have been playing great. Or Dortmund. Or Leipzig. I don't think PSG have been playing great. Or Marseille.
Chelsea.
Or Lens. Or Chelsea. And I don't think City have been... So in terms of football, in terms of the structure of the game, in terms of what they do with the ball and without the ball, I think they are the two best footballing teams this season so far. It might change between now and the end of the season.
Should they just scrap the rest of the Champions League and just give it to Napoli?
Oh my God, imagine.
I don't. I suspect.
You agree with him, right? Who else,
yeah,
who
there's,
would you
there's
put
no
in that
question.
Conversation?
I mean, look, one of the reasons why I want Milan to play Inter in the next round of the Champions League is because, what do you mean, I'm losing again? You saw Milan's performance against Salernitana, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these are two teams that have a ton of issues. I'm very proud of my city.
You
of
should
the fact
be.
Of being born next to the San Siro. The
you
fact
should
that
be.
We finally have, you know, no city in the universe has more Champions League titles or European Cups, except for Madrid. We should say no meaningful city than Milan. We have 10. Do you know how many London has? Two. And there's only one club in Europe with a European Cup. Only one club in London with a European Club, right? Like, all these other cities, all these pretendo cities,
I know.
The, you know, the home of football, really, is the land of everything, is Milan. Under the Madonnina looks after us. I'm completely digressing here, but you get my point.
Yeah,
the problem is, these teams aren't good. So I'd rather they just play each other than go
at least one would be in the semifinal, and then you never know.
Exactly. Then you never know.
Exactly.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
All right, enough Holland. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, guys.
Napoli beat Eintracht 3-0 to advance to the Champions League quarterfinal. Jules, are you one of those guys who's been particularly impressed because they haven't beaten any European heavyweights this season, unless you want to include Liverpool, which might be a bit of a stretch calling them...
Ajax as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a real heavyweight. No, but they haven't beaten Bayern or Paris Saint-Germain or City or whatever, right?
You beat what's in front of you. I mean, you want to redo the draw? We redo the group stages and they face Real Madrid and Bayern Munich in the... This is an outstanding team. We stress it enough every show. An incredible team with players playing at their absolute best. Pretty much all at the same time. It's very rare that you've got one who's just a bit under the weather. They're all so good. It's amazing. Nobody would want to draw them in the draw on Friday. That's for sure. And I don't know, I'm excited to see where they are. At some point, we've said it before, they might lack a bit of experience when you get to maybe semi-final, second leg, last few minutes against the Bayern or Real Madrid. Yeah, of course, and it will be part of their learning process. But they are a very special team, and I think they can do special things this season.
Of course, two goals from Victor Osimhen.
Which means...
The best is yet... to come. But no, they're in a very good spot. If they win five more games in Serie A, I think they've clinched a Serie A title.
Yeah, that's right.
Which also gives them more latitude. They have a deep squad, especially
really
up front
squad.
In the midfield. So yeah. I think they're in good shape. I don't think they necessarily fear anybody.
They shouldn't.
Napoli City is the game that I think a lot of people would want to watch because of the two approaches. I don't know. I think...
I would love that.
That'd be pretty cool.
Gab, we warned about this on Monday, of course, but despite the chief of police in Naples banning away supporters, many Eintracht Frankfurt fans traveled anyway, I think 600 of them or 650 of them, and there was trouble in town.
Yeah, there was trouble in town. A lot of trouble.
Loads of trouble.
They were joined reportedly by Atalanta fans who are trained with Eintracht fans and who absolutely hate Napoli.
Yeah.
And look, I dedicate this to, you know, Peter Fischer, the Eintracht president, sniff,
yeah,
and all those other people who lost their rag when the chief of police said, oh, how dare you go and ban the visiting supporters, blah, 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 you can't do that. And also, I'm sorry to say, Cheffrin as well, saying, oh, this is unconscionable. Okay, they're doing this because they have some level of intel here, which suggests that this is going to happen. If 650 of these dudes show up without tickets, and you can't stop people from traveling, there's no borders anymore. It's Schengen. You don't need a passport to get to Naples, right? Maybe, I'm not saying you have to trust the police and law enforcement, but they're the ones who are responsible. And their reaction to, by the way, I don't like, because they ended up basically shutting the whole city down, affecting the many people in Naples. Not everybody in Naples is a football fan. Not everybody in Naples is like, oh, look, I want to go and hide at home because these guys are running rampant on the streets. And by the way, it's not just Eintracht and Atalanta fans, because Napoli support also have a really, really poor history.
Yeah.
And they've got elements among them.
With them too, yeah.
Yeah. We had ambushes. We had all sorts of things.
Everything.
This was going to happen.
Always.
So this is not a good look for many.
Imagine if 5,000 or 6,000 Frankfurt fans had traveled. Grégory Sertic, who is the former Marseille player, played in France, was commentating the game for Canal Plus, and he was mistaken. I don't know if mistaken is even the right word. For a Napoli fan, for a Napoli person, for a Naples habitant, by the Frankfurt fan, got beaten up. I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, it's. I think Eintracht need to take a pretty strong look at themselves. I don't
Terrible.
Care. Look, I'm not. It's not a reflection on you, but you came out and you said, "Oh, this is an injustice to our fans." Okay, yeah, no, see what happens with these people. And by the way, again, Napoli fans have been banned before. There's definitely some ultras among them who have no business being at football matches. No miracle comeback for Liverpool, Jules. They lose away to Real Madrid 1-0.
To go through, as they lost obviously 5-2 the first leg. They had to have the perfect game, really, and it was far from that. They needed an extraordinary game or night, and it was very ordinary the way they play. It was, I thought, slow, sluggish, no creativity. That midfield two of Fabinho and Milner, I'm not really sure what Klopp was trying to do. That front four, Jota, Darwin, Salah and Gakpo, clearly you can tell they haven't played enough together. There was just not much. They had a couple of half chances, okay, I give you that, but it was very easy, I think, to control for Real Madrid. I thought Camavinga was outstanding in midfield. And
after being pants at the weekend.
Yeah, by left back.
Yeah.
It's easier for him when you play him in his right position, of course. Kroos and Modric, of course, running the game. And then, Karim the Dream, of course, with the only goal in the game. And sticking with Madrid and with Karim the Dream, according to reports, including on ESPN, Karim Benzema will be getting a one-year extension. Do you like that?
If you get him for another year, if you don't lock him onto these three-year deals or whatever.
Yeah, it would just be a year, right?
This idea that Madrid are doing is like with our old players, they like it here so much, they enjoy it so much, and it's Benzema, it's Modric, let's give them one-year deals. I mean, many, many years ago, Arsenal used to do that, right? Yeah. Player turned 30, 30, one-year deal.
Yeah.
I think it's smart because you have a known quantity. Now, is Benzema going to decline and not play to his salary? Yeah, sure, because he's getting older, right? But you're only locked in for 1 year. Yeah. It means you can still go and make a big forward signing or whatever. I think this is smart from Madrid, and I assume they're getting him at the right number.
Yeah, and Karim is very happy. So,
Inter are also through the quarterfinals after sweating out a scoreless draw against Porto. Jules, this wasn't pretty, but it got the job done.
It got the job done. Well done, Onana in goal. Çalhanoğlu got play of the match. It was a defensive performance, which you kind of expected in a way, maybe. I still don't know how Porto didn't score, I have to be honest here. I love that Inter through, of course, but for this Porto side, especially that the last chance or the just before that one where they hit the bar, the post, or Nana saved, there was a block. There was how on earth you didn't score? It was ridiculous, but well done to Inter.
Yeah, well, I think well done to Simone Inzaghi too.
Because
they lost on Friday, there were people who wanted him fired. And Inzaghi said something. Because Inzaghi's kind of low-key, he looks kind of goofy in his interviews. And he said something which I think really resonates with me because it's a skill I don't have. He says, don't mistake me being polite with me being unintelligent. Yeah. And I thought that was a great quote because he's always very polite.
Yeah.
And he's always low-key.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know what? The guy's got stones as well.
Exactly.
And well done to the team for bouncing back.
Yeah. And more than 1,000 Inter supporters who bought ticket in the Porto end of the ground and travelled to Porto, of course, were not allowed into the stadium gap. UEFA have opened an investigation. From all the witnesses that we hear, it was a bad mess.
So there's a couple of things going on here. One is there's footage which looked a little bit like Paris all these guys being like riot police, like stopping them, and it looked like they were on a concourse.
Just parking them there, outside.
It's hard to tell if you don't quite know whether that was an unsafe situation or not from what I've seen, right? I don't want to compare it to Paris. It looked like that a little bit, but we don't know. You have to have rules about this. Now, in terms of public safety, if you have a rule that you cannot buy tickets in the home end if you're an away supporter, and you apply that rule, and it's clearly written that that is the rule, I don't have a problem with them being left out. If that is not the rule, if there is no clear rule like that, because look, I can understand, if you have 1,000 of these guys showing up in Inter gear in the Porto home end, that could be problematic, could be a public safety issue. I don't have an issue with that. But you have to have clear rules to go and decide what this is, and you can't mislead people about this.
Yeah, talk to them.
Look, I did it years ago, mixed in with the home fans while I was supporting an away team. But you do that, you're low-key. You don't go there and, create problems, right?
Yeah.
And if that happens, clubs will look the other way.
Yeah.
But we see it in the Premier League. We see it all the time, right? Like, a London club playing Manchester United and United score and somebody celebrates and the stewards come over and say, okay, sir,
check you out.
We'll move you elsewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, but you have to have clear rules.
Yeah.
Let's stick with UEFA because President Alexander Čeferin sat down on Gary Neville's YouTube show and had some interesting things to say, like the fact that UEFA would need to look at the rules on multi-club ownership and that maybe it's not such a bad thing.
I don't believe that. I really don't believe that this is something he has in his mind. I think if that goes through, I think this is the end of football. I think for me, this is unacceptable. This is unbearable. You can't have two clubs owned by the same people facing each other in the Champions League, the Europa League. I don't care what competition. This is just not on. It's not possible. And why would you score such an own goal like that? Or maybe you just put a filler out and see the reaction and now you're realizing that everybody is on you and people saying like, this is outrageous. UEFA can't do that. Then now you say, oh, okay, maybe it was not a good idea.
But is he saying this in public to take pressure off his buddy Nasser, maybe?
Yeah. And that's exactly what I said on French radio last night. I said, maybe Nasser said, hey, why don't you put a filler, see how it goes, you know, because you agree with me, right? This is not possible. It can't happen.
1,000%. If you want to have multi-club ownership, that's fine. You cannot play in the same. And what he says, like, oh, but I don't think the players would go and intentionally lose. It's just even the appearance of impropriety isn't good here. Exactly. Yeah, just it's just not a good look. Not good. Bad idea, Alex. Yeah. Move away from it. And the fact that, you know, it happened with Leipzig and Salzburg a few years ago and someone was grandfathered in. Fine, if you want to grandfather those guys in because you did it before, that's fine. But going forward, no more.
Over to Rwanda, where the FIFA Council met and rubber-stamped a number of proposed changes. Gab, let's start with the 48-team World Cup. Of course, as we know, in 2026, it won't have 16 groups of three, but 12 groups of four.
Which makes a lot more sense. 16 groups of three is a recipe for collusion and chaos. Now, I want to say, like, I have no problem whatsoever with the 48-team World Cup. I think it fits what the World Cup is these days, and that's fine. And you can read, I wrote a column about this. You can go and read it. You can go and tell me I'm an idiot, as many people have done, because of the dilution of quality, whatever. We don't have to debate here. But if you are going to have one, I think hopefully we can agree 12 groups of four makes more sense.
Definitely.
Even though it means that third-place finishers go through. What I would have done a little bit differently was I would have
given... seeded the top of the groups, right?
I would have given the... eight teams, the great group winners, a bye to the round of 16. And then the other four and, you know, the rest, they can play off as like a sweetener, because I think it's important to have that. That didn't happen because more games equals more money, and more money, which then goes back to the member associations, many of whom would not exist without FIFA funding.
True. The World Cup would be a bit longer as well, a week longer, I think.
You think six days longer, but again, I don't think it's an issue.
There's more games. So.
It's the middle of the summer. They get time off after and before. Whatever this is not a player welfare issue. Anybody who says this is a player welfare issue, no, there's no player welfare coming into this. This is not.
It's an extra game.
Who's a player.
But if you win the World Cup, you play eight instead of the
one extra
seven.
Game for four teams. One of them is the third place playoff, which nobody cares about anyway. Jules, we also know that in 2025 there will be an expanded Club World Cup replacing the Confederations Cup. So it'll be like a test run. It's going to involve 32 clubs. This is the allocation. Tell me if you think it reflects the relative strength and inclusive enough. 12 from UEFA, 6 from South America, 4 each from CONCACAF, Asia and Africa, 1 from Oceania, and 1 from the host nation, which, if you want to be cynical and say it'll be Saudi Arabia, no, it probably won't be, because I presume we'll have this in the US. So
yes, probably. Yeah, I mean, you could say that maybe there's too many, maybe from the UEFA, from the teams, the Champions League teams, maybe. But I mean,
they bring the money.
They bring money, and they bring viewing numbers, viewing ratings, everything you want, big stars. So I'm all for it. As you know, we love our football. More games. This is good, as you said. It probably be played in the summer every 4 years to qualify. It's the winners of the Champions League, for example, who get guaranteed place in it. The rest for the coefficients, all that kind. There's a lot of money to be earned for clubs, for example. So that's good.
Are you into, what about the calendar congestion argument?
That's what I find really strange, is that decision was made, and maybe you tell me they might have asked the clubs if they were okay. I know UEFA voted for it, for example, but how can you decide this and without consulting the leagues, for example? And Javier Tebas was very vocal with a big statement as soon as this was announced official, by saying, like, you can't do those things without asking the leagues if they're in favour or not, because they would have the schedule, even off-season, they would have things that they've prepared, they've worked on, maybe.
They'll have
for
summer
the clubs.
Tours.
Yes, but all of that you have to take in consideration. You can't just take that decision on your own.
I don't want to just be cynical and be like everybody's looking after their own interests, but I think to some degree people are, right? So FIFA like this because they need a warm-up tournament, and it replaces a Confederations Cup, which, you know, is expanded and whatever, but ultimately, like, was not a big moneymaker for anybody, and people weren't sure, right? 32 teams will replicate, will be a better test run, right? And on top of that, it'll make a ton of money and give them more leverage over clubs. So that's why FIFA, and by the way, we say FIFA, it's 211 member federations, right? Voted in favor of this. It generates more money. I think it also, there is a balance of power argument vis-a-vis UEFA and the Champions League as well, which I think comes into it. So that's why they're in favor of it. The clubs are in favor of it. And when I say the clubs, I don't mean, you know, the club from Oceania who's going to go. We're like, whoa, hey, we get to play Real Madrid. No, I mean the 12 UEFA clubs that are likely to qualify, which are these massive clubs.
Yeah.
And they're in favor of it because they're going to get a big chunk of money. And in some ways, they're the ones who matters, right? So we know the federations are in favor of it. The clubs are in favor of it. UEFA probably would rather have a summer Champions League if it were entirely up to them.
Yeah.
But equally, there's give and take and there's negotiation. And more importantly, the UEFA members' associations and UEFA want to keep the clubs happy because they don't want the clubs going off and forming their own Super League, as has happened before, or trying to. So they went along with it. Who's not happy with this? The league. If I'm Javier Tebas, I say, oh, I wanted to organize a Liga Espectacular in the U.S.
Miami,
and a tour and whatever, right? So they're not going to like it. The people who organized the summer tours of the U.S. or in Asia, they're not going to like it.
No, of course. But like in France, you have the Community Shield, for example. You know,
you
maybe clashing at this.
Community
I know, but that's going to take a long time to play this tournament.
Go and play it in Saudi Arabia in January, like your neighbors in Spain and Italy are going to do, right?
That's true.
Join
us. That's an idea.
But no, and the player welfare argument, which I think is a valid argument. I'd like there to be more science behind it. I think if there's a rest period before and after, it's one thing, right?
Yeah, so but how long? That's the thing, Gab. It's not just a week before and a week after.
You have sports science people who do this, right? I think it is something to track. I think the number of, I think there's too many teams in the top leagues in Europe. I think they play too much football. I'm totally in agreement on this, right? There is a balance to be struck there.
Yeah.
That, for me, is a single biggest argument against it. But, you know, they voted on it.
And just to make things more confusing, Gab, FIFA also said they would explore an annual Club World Cup that would look a little bit like the current Club World Cup.
Yeah, they'll have to call it.
This one, as we said, they mentioned before, is once every four. It's every 4 years, so it won't be every year.
Yeah. So this is the trophy that this year was played in Morocco and played in the Gulf. It was played before that. It was played in Japan for many years, and you have the champions of each confederation.
Yeah.
And it used to be a really big deal back when it was the champions of Europe and South America many, many moons ago. It's still a big deal, I think, in South America.
Yeah,
and outside
for sure.
Of Europe. In Europe, yeah, it's a bigger deal in Spain. But in England, less so. And I don't even know that it was on TV. I think it was on weird FIFA TV or something over here. I understand wanting to keep it. The way they're doing it, where it's, okay, the champions of Europe, the UEFA Champions League winners, will be challenged by the winner of this other tournament involving.
So instead of playing the semi-final like they do now, and then the final if they qualify, they just play the final, basically.
Yeah, the other teams all play amongst themselves somewhere. And then the winner of the other team will go and play in the final. I don't know. It feels a little bit hokey. And then what do you do in the years when you do have the big Club World Cup?
You don't play. Which one has the most value? The one that you...
Oh, you have to ask that question.
Oh, my God.
Come on, man.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, Jules, here's something that FIFA did that I hope most will agree on. And after having criticized them, maybe we can praise them a tiny bit, maybe. From 2026, there will be one fewer international break. Remember, right now we have them September, October, November.
Yeah.
Now they're going to put the September and October ones together.
Yeah.
It'll be a 16-day break. which I think is actually shorter than the two individual breaks right now put together, in which they will play four games in late September, early October.
Good. That's the beginning. I won't lie, I was expecting more, to be fair. As we've been saying, this was a big thing, big deal, because you had the chance to reformat this, the calendar.
What do you want to do? Have all three international breaks?
No, but for example, they have the one in June. They will have two more games in June. We've seen last June what a disaster it was at the end of such a long season to have those teams. And they played four games each, which is more, I give you that. But still, the players didn't want to be there in June. They didn't want to have to play international football.
So I think the June ones, correct me if I'm wrong, exist because at some point you have to play international games.
Yeah,
and
no,
I think they exist for the Nations League and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah,
and
then a bunch which is true. But regardless of what you have to play, it's still extending the season a bit longer, and you go back to players' welfare of like, well, okay, when is the holidays? Because if you still play in June, well, then you have 2 weeks at the end of June, and then start of July, you have to go back training. So what, 2 weeks off? Is that all, really? And that's why I think this is, it's good that you've scrapped one. We're far from the Arsene Wenger idea, or we could have like everything played in 2 months and then there's no club football at the time, which was maybe too extreme. Maybe there was a middle ground to find somewhere. I don't know. But when I saw the June one, I was like, okay, but this is it. Like, they still haven't got it, really.
I would have rather kept
September, October, November, and scrap the June one, for example.
And got rid of June. I think the problem with that is you've got the Nations League in CONCACAF, and you have it in. And the other thing with the June one is in the years when you have a major competition like the World Cup or the Euros, it kind of gets swallowed up by the World Cup and the Euros because you play your pre-tournament friendlies there, which you would have to do anyway,
So
I think that was the compromise that was made there. I don't know. I think it's better than the status quo, but I take your point on June.
The Qatari Beaters are visiting Manchester United today, as in on Thursday. Sir Jim Ratcliffe will be there on Friday. Tomorrow, Gab, they'll have 10 days to submit their official bids, and supposedly higher than what they've offered so far, right? Because as you've been saying for a long time now, the problem was on the amount that they were offering.
And what happens if they don't submit their official bid?
No,
we're not selling. No, like this is not. I think especially when you just have two bidders, and it could change because there's strong suggestions that there's two other bidders involved. A United fan who's a massive United fan, who's a friend of mine, works in football, said he's super down on this. He's like, I fear we're going to end up with more debt and fewer Glazers. And what he's referring to is Joel and Avram and maybe one other Glazer buying out their siblings.
Yeah.
Could that be the other bid? Maybe with somebody else financing them, maybe somebody else, you know, getting involved.
Yeah.
I think this is still in flux. I would not fret over deadlines or anything. The Glazers do not need to sell. There's a split. They want to sell. This is not like the Chelsea situation where there was a hard deadline.
That's true.
Rain can push people along and decide who their preferential bidder is, but I think this is still going to be a long process. Jorge Messi was spinning Riyadh.
Woo!
So naturally, there are rumors that Al Hilal will make Lionel Messi an offer. Could the next chapter of the Messi-Ronaldo saga be written in Saudi? Or
imagine,
should we start the rumor that Jorge Messi, now, given that there's been a bit of a split between Cristiano and his longtime agent, George Mendes, maybe Jorge Messi says,
there.
Cristiano, look, I thought it was just such a great job looking after my son. How about I look after both of you? How about you guys go into business together?
Imagine. There have been a few rumors that Al Hilal were preparing this huge offer, similar to the one that Cristiano is on, like $200 million a year, whatever, for Messi. We know that Messi is already obviously involved in Saudi Arabia because he's got his ambassador.
Which is probably why Papa Messi was there.
You would think so. I think Messi is due a visit very soon as well. Part of that contract that he has as an ambassador for the country, the tourism board, all that kind of stuff. Would he want to go and play at Al Hilal to finish his career when he could stay in Paris at PSG or go to MLS, for example, which, no offense to the Saudi league, but he's a better level?
Or go back home to Rosario, where it all began, which is what I think you should do.
There's also some very informed journalists who just last night were saying that Messi right now has 60% chances to go back to Barcelona. I don't know how they would finance it, but hey, maybe if you want to.
Go back to Barcelona.
I know, like,
what's he going to do?
Our friend Gerard Romero last night saying 60% chances that right now he's going back. Like, how? They can't even register Gavi for a new number, let alone get Messi back on the books.
No. This is another Laporta lever. I guarantee you. Laporta is going to sell another chunk. Maybe he's going to sell the mini Estadi to Lionel Messi for $300 million, thereby pulling another lever.
That's a great idea.
And then Messi can come back and play.
Well, maybe. Inter CEO Beppe Marotta says that Romelu Lukaku will be going back to Chelsea when his loan expires at the end of the season. What do you make of it?
I make of it that if I were Beppe Marotta, this is exactly what I'd be saying. I'd be saying, hey, not our problem. Oh no, Chelsea, you can here take you it back.
Yeah.
While obviously leaving the back door open when Boehly like says, wait, Lukaku makes how much money? And then having this situation, I think Lukaku's already said that, you know, he would like to stay at Inter. He likes it at Inter. I think he'd be willing to take a pay cut as well. I think this is all part of that. I don't think Inter are going to say, oh, look, you came back, you were injured, you weren't very good when you were fit, so, no, gone. Gone at what they have to pay him now. By the way, even now, Chelsea are chipping in a big part of what it costs. They have all the leverage here. Unless Graham Potter said, ooh, I quite fancy Lukaku. I'm not the one who sent him away. Come back, Romelu, and be the centerpiece of my attack. But unless that happens, you know, I think they're doing this for leverage. And by the way, some people saying, oh, well, there'll be another Premier League team who takes him, blah, blah, blah.
Who?
Well, I'm sure there's mid-table Premier League
teams. That's not where you want to play.
But this is the thing. You're ignoring the fact, and this kind of bugs me when people do this. Romelu Lukaku, in addition to being an intelligent, educated man, at his age, at his stage of his career, he does not want to go and play for a mid-table team in the Premier League just so he can...
Completely.
He would rather take a pay cut, and he really makes an enormous amount of money, to play for a team that he feels a connection to and has a chance of winning something.
Yeah.
Which, you know, let's not always assume all these people just go to the highest bidder all the time. Houssam Aouar has made his decision to play for Algeria and not France, despite being capped by France.
Yeah.
Jules... are you concerned? Is this a loss?
No, I mean, he's a lovely player when he's fully fit on his game.
Which he hasn't been for 18 months.
Yeah, which is true. He's still only 24. And he will leave Lyon at the end of the season and go somewhere else where maybe he will revive his career. I don't know, like, you will see the best of Houssam Aouar. I really hope for him. I wish for him. But he decided to play for Algeria. Is that because he feels that he was not going to get into a really good French squad? Maybe he feels like he wants to make his family proud, his parents proud, to go with Algeria, where you've got good momentum with Jamel Belmadi, maybe as well. I respect his choice completely. He will become one of those players who've played for two different countries, which is still pretty remarkable, from Diego Costa, for example, to even Michel Platini, who had one cap with Kuwait. If you remember in 1988, he was allowed somehow to play against the USSR. Crazy story. But yeah, so one of them, you know, good for him. He will certainly, right now, he's not into Deschamps' mind for the next 4 years. So, you know, maybe.
As an aside, you know how football's full of sliding doors moments? There's a whole parallel multiverse. And yes, I don't even know if it's, you know, I'm connecting it to Spider-Man and Ant-Man because we're owned by Disney. But imagine if, remember when Aouar was close to joining Arsenal?
Yeah.
And remember how, at least as I understand it, it kind of fell apart, in part because his agent, family members, commissioned too high, prices keep going up.
Yeah, a few things like that.
He could have made it happen if he really wanted to join Arsenal.
I think so.
I just wonder, would his whole life be panned out differently? Would he still be a France player? Would he be better off? Worse
off?
We'll never know.
No, you're
sliding
right.
Sliding doors.
You're right. Sliding doors. FIFPro have written to FIFA urging them to have equal prize money and equal conditions for men and women at their respective World Cups, of course. Gab, would they get their wish?
So what bugs me about this story is that every time this comes up, there's a massive dumbing down and decontextualizing of the story, right? So people will always mention, ooh, the prize money. Oh, look, it was $400 million or whatever it was for the men and just $7 million for the women, right? So one thing they always seem to forget is that there's 32 teams in one World Cup, many more games, and there were 24 teams back then. Now, should there be more prize money? And the argument that they're making for more prize money for women is, oh, but the... if the prize money remains low, federations don't have an incentive to go and spend money on the women's team.
Yeah.
First of all, if a federation has a business plan to spend money on the women's team so they can get more World Cup prize money, that's not, the federation is not doing its job.
Yeah.
That's not, you should get prize money which, by the way, goes to the federation, not the players. And one thing FIFA are doing, which I think is important, is saying a minimum 30% goes back to the players, which in the women's game is important because while there is professional women's football and there's a lot of women who make a lot of money, there's also, although a fraction of what the men make, there's also a ton who play for free still to this day at the World Cup. But the World Cup that's coming up in Australia, there will be a lot of women who are amateurs, right? That's just a fact of where the game is right now. The difficult thing is, I think you can't, and in terms of equal conditions, for the part that FIFA pays for, I think 100%. I think there should be. FIFA gives money to federations so they can send their teams to the World Cup. Because, again, people don't seem to realize this. They assume everybody's like the FA here in England or the Fiji in Italy or whatever. There's a lot of federations who can't even afford to send their team to the World Cup without FIFA saying, here's $2 million, here's plane tickets, here's a hotel. You want comparable conditions within that FA? I think that's reasonable, and I think that's dignified and justified. In terms of having the same prize money pot, when the money goes back to the federations, this is my problem with it. Number one, a lot of people in the game who advocate for women's football have said the women's rights should be sold and commercialized separately from the men's rights. And I think it's the right thing to do. I think they're a lot more valuable than people realize. Yeah. It's a growth area and so on. Once you decide to sell them separately, I think it's difficult to say, all right, but then let's go and get more money from this pot and bring it here. I think FIFA should spend more money on women's football and developing women's football, but I think the priority should be developing women's football. And what that means is going to all those countries, because all those countries where there is no women's team or there's no women's youth team, or it's that the women that want to play don't get a chance to play, or they play in terrible conditions. That's called developing the game.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, and I've said this a million times, you're probably sick of me saying it, at the last World Cup, 7 of the 8 quarterfinalists also happened to be 7 of the 8 which have the most registered women's players. Yeah. They're all wealthy associations. Australia doesn't need more money. The US doesn't need more money. France doesn't need more money. Germany doesn't need more money.
That's true.
What are we talking about? These are people who already invest. So you're simply shifting more money to people who already have it.
Which is going to make them stronger anyway compared to us.
Yeah, look, I think if it's profitable, and I think the Women's World Cup can be profitable and is very close to profitability, of course they should get a slice based on that. But until we're there, the goal has to be, I think, to develop women's football. So what I would like to see is, rather than just increase the prize money, put more money forward and say, this isn't going to be prize money if you happen to be good at playing football, or if you're an enormous country like the US, which is Title IX and has 50% of the world's registered footballers, and so you go and win things. No. I'm going to give this money to develop, to ring fence it, to give it to FA so that you have to spend it on women's football, and otherwise you don't get the money. And I'm going to go and audit it and make sure you're spending it wisely, so that women have the protections, so that if they want to play football, they have the same chance of doing it. That's FIFA's job. Yeah. And I think that's how it should be done. Let's go back to football on the pitch, Jules. Ghent beat Istanbul Basaksehir here in the Europa League 4-1. And Nigerian striker Gift Orban scored a hat-trick in 3 minutes. Now, I mention this because your boy, Loi Openda, did not make it into the show on Monday. You'd put him down when we have our list of prospective quick hits. Yeah. He scored a hat-trick in 4 minutes. The official cutoff time to make it, if your name is Openda, not Erling Haaland, is a hat-trick in 3 minutes.
Fair enough. The gift that keeps on giving, of course, Gift Orban, the young Nigerian striker who just
Nigerian,
arrived.
Nigerian, not Hungarian, Nigerian.
Nigerian. Did I say Hungarian?
No. Because obviously Orban is Nigerian.
Yeah. Arriving in January from Stabæk in Norway and having an incredible impact on this team. So I was so happy he's scoring goals for fun. He's a really good kid with huge potential. So well done to him. And I think he deserves to be on the show. But Openda deserves to be as well. But you didn't want to put him there.
And their names both start with O, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, true. An independent investigation by the USSF has found that Greg Berhalter is free to reapply for his job as the US men's national team head coach. This all stems from allegations raised by the mother of Joe Reyna. Remember that story. Gab, do you think that he wants to come back, and do they want him back, more importantly, as well?
I don't know. I think this has been really, really trying for him. I definitely spent some time with him. It's been a pretty horrendous experience going down to what happened at the World Cup. Now, there's a lot of people that have spoken about this, about the influence of the Reinas on the team. He, Berhalter himself, has spoken out in public, I think, to the Daily Telegraph over here. I think the most important thing that he's cleared. He's not damaged goods.
Yeah.
They have shown that what happened when he and his now wife, Rosalind,
yeah, 30 years ago.
Yeah, when they were 18, has absolutely no bearing or relevance on the present. It has no bearing or relevance on what happened at the World Cup camp involving Gio Reyna. Yeah. I think that's the single biggest thing. And he is allowed to get on with his wife.
Both.
Yeah, maybe with his wife too. Yeah. But with his life at this stage. That is the single fairest, most important thing. Whether he wants to come back, on what terms, I think the USSF might be looking to appoint a general manager, sporting director who's in charge of everything, and then make the commitment to him. Right now they have an interim guy, Hudson, I think, in charge. Otherwise, maybe he'll decide that the next step of his career is somewhere else, maybe in Europe.
Maybe a club level,
Maybe a club level. I think he feels very stung by what happened. I think there's a clear learning opportunity. And by the way, look out. We have an interview with Christian Pulisic coming up on our website by our colleague Graham Hunter, where I think Pulisic might have something to say about what happened at the World Cup. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is back in the Sweden squad at age 41. Jules, just a sentimental choice?
I mean, I'm sure that's part of it, but also the fact that, like, he's doing at Milan, that he can help the younger generation, you know, being there in the squad. He's 41 in 5 months. And if he plays, I think they play Belgium and Azerbaijan, I think, the two games, he will become the oldest ever player to have played in the Euro qualifier, beating Dino Zoff's record all the time ago. And I'm sure he's hoping that maybe making the Euros too, if they qualify and if he's still playing, which would obviously become, he would become then the most, the oldest player to ever play at the European tour, the European
Championships.
So well done to him. I'm glad. I mean, he hasn't played much with Milan, but he's back. I think they're more as the kind of like dressing room leader than anything else. But I'm sure he would play a little bit in the two games. So, hey, another record for him. Morocco have been added to the Spain-Portugal bid for the 2030 World Cup gap. So we'll have two multi-continent bids then.
Yeah, Spain, Portugal, and supposedly Ukraine. I think this is a very calculated ploy. So Morocco always bid for the World Cup. They're dying
all the time. Yeah.
Reality is they're not going to host a World Cup on their own, not when it's 48 teams. So somebody thought, hey, Morocco, you're just across the water from Spain, Portugal. In fact, Ceuta and Melilla, which technically are part of Spain, or are part of Spain, like they obviously border Morocco. Why don't you join up with them so you get to host the World Cup? They've supposedly going to add Ukraine if the war is over, I think, as some sort of feel-good thing. I don't know. And the nice thing here, Morocco's in Africa. And so a chunk of African votes are going to go to Morocco, which, if you count, UEFA is going to back the Spain-Portugal bid. If you put those together, you're going to be in a very, very strong position to counter both South the America. South American bid, which, of course, is my sentimental choice because it's the anniversary of the first World Cup in 1930, and that's Uruguay, Argentina, Paraguay, and Colombia, Peru, whoever it is. Or the other, you know, tri-continental bid with Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Greece. So I think this would put them in very much in the driver's seat.
Yeah, let's see.
The Sully March goal gives Brighton a 1-0 victory over Crystal Palace. Jules, we like both Roberto De Zerbi and Patrick Vieira. One is now 6 points on the Champions League spots with two games in hand. Yeah. The other hasn't won a game in 2023.
Yeah, that's right. It's tough for Patrick at the moment, although they played better and they started well that game against Brighton. They could have, maybe should have, taken the lead if Otton Edouard had scored the header. They have a problem. They don't score enough. They don't have a prolific goal scorer, striker. And I think that's part of the problem. But at least they've had a shot on target. Or at least, because that was not the case in the last three games, which was a Premier League record. For the Zerbi, the fairy tale continues in the sense that they're still very much in the conversation to even finish top four. It's incredible. Not at their best in that game. So you need the slow start that I mentioned. But in the end, they see it through. They score. Mitoma assist. Marsh's goal again. It's great. It's great, man. Now they've got the FA Cup to focus on. It's a very exciting end of the season if you're Brighton or Brighton fans, for sure.
We should have a chat with Zerbi. Invite him on.
Yeah, let's try to see that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The stadium was named after Pelé in Rwanda, and Gianni Infantino has urged every country to name at least one stadium after the late Brazilian superstars. Guys, is that a good idea?
I get why he's saying this. I don't know. To me, you should name a stadium for something that has some local meaning and resonance. And obviously, Pelé has local meaning and resonance to a lot of people around the world, so I'm sure there'll be multiple countries where you can do that. But do I feel the need for the Pharaohs to open a, and rather than making it about mackerel, make it about Pelé? It seems a little bit. Yeah. There's other ways to honor him.
Yeah.
It was a Champions League night last night, but Ousmane Dembélé
was
at the Stadium of Light. Not the one in Lisbon, but the one in Sunderland, watching Sunderland versus Sheffield United. Does this make sense to you, Joel?
No, at all, no. I mean, I suppose he has friends there. To be fair, I saw the story, and then I wanted to follow it up and ask a few people why was he there. But I had other things to do. I forgot. I saw him there. It was funny.
Out of context, Dembélé. Yeah, there should completely. Be a Twitter account. You know, he's apparently friends with... He was invited by the owner, Kirill Louis-Dreyfus.
Yeah, of course, who is the son of the former Marseille owner, of course.
And the brother of Julia Louis-Dreyfus from Seinfeld. No, maybe not.
No, not this one. I didn't know they were friends, to be fair, so I assumed that indeed that was where this was coming from. But yeah, good for him. He's obviously injured. I'm sure he asked permission, I would think. Not like a Tchouaméni, the NBA game with Real Madrid. To go there, I don't even know if he saw a good game. I don't know. I didn't follow the
championship. I think they lost. I think Sheffield United won.
Ah, okay. Well, sorry. Maybe the jinx was Ousmane.
But by the way, what's cooler? Skipping out to go to Fashion Week and Paris Fashion Week, or going from Barcelona in winter to Sunderland?
Oh, I love it. But that's what friendship does. Well, this is good.
They're good buddies.
Gnabry and Tchouaméni, maybe he went to see some friends at some point, but this is
he's got lots of friends on Wearside,
Edouard Mendy is negotiating a new deal with Chelsea, and he's back at training, by the way, after his injury. His current one expires in 2025. But it's not going well, Gab.
No. Well, obviously... Kepa's been the number one in the interim, and it's hard to get Kepa out. There was strong suggestions that they offered him a 6-year deal, which, because he is one of the lowest paid players at Chelsea right now, because when he came over, it wasn't big a deal, and then obviously he goes and wins the Champions League. So he feels like he needs it. So they gave him one of those super long deals where you'll get the same amount of money, just over more time. And he wasn't 100% on that. I think it's one to monitor. I don't think he wants to be number two for another 2 years.
That's true, too.
So maybe if they don't reach a deal, maybe he goes on loan somewhere if Potter's going to stick with Kepa. Yeah. It's a very rapid kind of fall in terms of status.
Yeah, but definitely.
It's interesting, though. It does offer a big hint that, Boly and Igbali are legit when they say we're not going to spend a ton on wages the previous regime. Gianni Infantino has been re-elected FIFA president by acclamation, which is what happens when nobody stands against you. or rather, some people did stand against him, but they didn't get the necessary five backers to be nominated. Jules, I don't think it's good for any democratic institutions when there's only one guy running. And by the way, this applies to UEFA, where Alexander Cheferin will be re-elected by acclamation. It applies to CONCACAF, where our friend Victor Montagnani was re-elected without anybody running against him.
Yeah.
I think Alejandro Dominguez in South America.
It's pretty safe as well, yeah.
Nobody stood against him.
I know. It's not, even if you think that Infantino and all the others are doing a good job, maybe you're right, but come on. It's like, I don't know, even if I don't like the acclamation anyway to start with, where are we, back in Rome, all those years ago or something? I don't get it. But
you know, it's especially stupid, right? Like, there's stories today of some Western European FAs like England and Norway that they're unhappy because of the one love thing and the armband. And look, I think it's a very valid argument.
It's a valid point.
And so they said that they're not going to clap at the acclamation. How about you do something meaningful, like get behind, nominate somebody. If you have an alternate viewpoint, do that.
Because we're not going to notice if the 209 other countries...
Yes, I'm really going to notice. Come on,
FIFA,
man.
I'm going to clap. Let's go to the CONCACAF Champions League now. And Violet from Haiti beating Austin FC 3-2 on aggregate. Gab, this is unbelievable.
Is it pronounced Violet? I'm assuming they speak French in Haiti.
Yeah. I mean, I said you should say Violet, really, but I thought I'd put a little English spin on it.
I just wanted you to say Violet.
Yeah, Violet. I mean, but I'm not sure if people would really understand Violet, but I think, you would say...
I'm not sure people hadn't heard of Violet. This is a tremendous story. If you type in like a result or a match on Google, like it gives you like the crest and the lineup to make it. There's no Violet crest. It's just like a big gray thing, right? This is such an underdog story. It's such a humiliation for Austin FC and that cuddly pre-court or whatever the weirdo's name is. This team is from Haiti. They haven't played a game in 8 months. Haiti's obviously had a ton of problems of the president assassinated. It's a very poor country to begin with. Things are breaking down. So the league was suspended 8 months ago. Nobody knows when it's going to start again. So as a result, they have to play their home games, and they played the first leg, which they won 3-0 against Austin across the border in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
On top of that, to travel to the U.S., and this, by the way, you got his CONCACAF. You have to sort this out, right?
I mean, that was.
It's humiliating. It's unnecessary.
It's unacceptable, really.
No, what you have to do is, you know what? U.S. government decides not to give visas to these people, because this is what happened, right? They had they had 12 players who were in the squad in the first leg who did not get visas, were not allowed visas to go to the U.S. U.S. can decide whatever they want on their borders equally. If I'm CONCACAF, I say, hey, look, these guys are registered. Is there another country where we can play this game? Let's play this game in a neutral venue, right?
Completely.
Because obviously it gives certain teams an unfair advantage, right?
Yeah, it's the B team, basically, that Austin played in.
It's worse than the B team. So the goalkeeper was terrible. They had no backup goalkeeper. The goalkeeper threw one into his own net. But on top of that, they had to recruit two extra players from some team in New Jersey. They're two Haitian immigrants to the U.S., to make up the numbers. They had 14 players,
and they still qualified.
Yeah, Austin, who I think were fourth last year, the fourth best record in MLS last year. Tremendous
shout
out to Violet.
Humiliation.
For Austin FC.
Yeah, absolutely. But for MLS as well as a league.
All MLS.
But still, like as a league, you can't lose your representative of your league in a time like this.
They definitely. It's one thing when you don't get a visa because you have a criminal record or whatever. There's rules on that. But this should not be allowed in Europe. I don't think it would be allowed. It shouldn't be allowed in CONCACAF either. It's just not fair to these countries.
Yeah.
Play it elsewhere if you can't sort out the visa. Joseph, this brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday.
Oh, of course.
Because on Sunday it's the Clásico. How about that?
And Juventus Inter as well.
And Juventus Italia. So. Yeah, the Derby d'Italia, which, you know, unlike the Clásico, doesn't involve the first top two teams in the table because Napoli are out of sight. But hey, there's that too.
Still a big game.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.